I don't know. I think for me, frictionless isn't the goal. And if it is the goal, the cloud's going to be very seductive.
It is.
But I don't mind some stoic stuff. I don't mind grinding beans and making coffee. I don't mind walking somewhere.
I got it. But that's because you like to feel like you're better than people.
Not really at all. I think, I know he's joking there, folks, just by the way.
This is Super Fast Business with James Schranko. Helping you build your business super fast.
This is episode 5 of 25. Welcome to Super Fast Business. I'm James Schranko, your host, and today's special guest, of course, is Dean Jackson.
Wow. Episode 5 of 25.
We're getting there.
We must be closing in. Has there been a more frequent guest on the Super Fast Business podcast than me?
There has. I think Clay Collins.
Okay.
I came across Clay when he had a video player that would skin YouTube videos. It was called Lead. Oh, gosh. This is a while back. Before he had Lead Pages, he had Lead Player.
Oh, really?
And it would play a video and you could then pop an opt-in. I thought, this guy's clever.
I vaguely remember something like that. Yeah.
He used to record little videos underneath his staircase.
Okay.
He had a show, a marketing show.
Yes.
Then it turned into Lead Pages.
Okay.
And he sort of went off onto this rocket ship journey. And I just kept documenting the journey as we went through.
Right.
I've now started doing the same thing with some other entrepreneurs. But the great strategy with that one was spotting talent early and going through the journey. I remember introducing him to Ezra Firestone.
Yes.
At TNC in San Francisco. We went across the road to a bar. And after the first beer, Ezra confessed to me that he doesn't even drink beer. He was just being social and polite.
That's the best. Yeah.
And they, you know, Clay came and spoke at Super Fast Business Live in Manly.
Mm-hmm.
And, just watching his success, they got some serious funding. I think something like $65 million.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and now he seems to be into cryptos. So there's a couple of other...
As you do.
Yeah, a couple of other guests have had a few shows, but I think if we stay the course, 25 will be the most.
I think this is great. And I love the longevity of it.
Yeah,
I
mean, starting with the end in mind.
Yeah. So I'm back in Manly. We've been spending the week together here.
We should set the scene. Mm-hmm. That's the beauty of an audio program. You might hear cars driving past. you can probably feel the chilling cold of winter. We're in a circa $3.9 million estate here down in Manly, which doesn't really get you as much house as you might have expected. Is that right, Dean?
We were joking about it. This man, oh man, yes. It's like, it's great location.
Good location.
Yeah, I mean, right in Manly, anywhere in Manly is just beautiful. But the house is older, and I guess nothing has central heat or air. And it's, you know, just right now, this week has been a little bit cold, so you notice it a little more. But yes, a little rustic. Not rustic. What's the right word for this? Is
ancient.
It's an older house. I mean, But anyway,
it's probably historically protected. It'd be one of the earlier little cottages. It's got thin glass. And typically houses in Australia, we're not geared for super cold. Mm. I mean, it's 16 degrees Celsius. I'm not sure what that translates to.
I was thinking like two of the years that I've come have been particularly chilly. This is one of the chilly ones because it's been sort of rainy or overcast.
It has been overcast the whole time.
But we've gotten, we've discovered some new restaurants. Because over on this side of town.
Yeah, you've basically picked on the south side of Manly, southeast. So you're getting a different range of food outlets.
It's been delightful.
In the time since you came last, I moved just a little bit up the hill, but my entire ecosystem has transformed.
Right. Where you were right in the heart of Manly. Yeah,
so I would walk into the village every day.
Yeah.
Now, we drive every day somewhere. Mm-hmm. And that's also opened up my surfing range because instead of walking across the road every day, we'll drive to the right
place drive,
for the right conditions.
Yeah.
We call it surf safari. We go every day for a surf safari and grab a coffee and we make a bit of an adventure from it. But it is amazing how just a small shift in geography, you can have a completely different life.
Well, this is what I really love about traveling. Like, this is part of the thing, what I love about, I'm setting up a very nice little life routine here of these places that I go to again and again, like between Toronto and London and Amsterdam and here, at least, you know, going those places on an annual basis. We've got, you know, established routine of going there. And I'm really enjoying getting those little slices of life because they're very different. It's a very different life in each of those places, you know?
And I think if you're doing that on repeat,
yeah.
And I'm thinking the example for me would be going to the Philippines,
yeah,
three times a year for the last 7 or 8 years. Mm-hmm. That's part of my world map in my head.
Yes.
When I get off the plane, I know exactly where I am in, yeah, the airport. I know where to get the pickup. I know, yeah, the roads. I know. I mean, I have a house there. I'm fully becoming naturalized.
Right.
So my world picture includes that. And yes, your world picture, you have this, yes, familiarity with London,
yes,
and Canada,
yes,
and Amsterdam,
right,
and Sydney.
Yeah. And I love that. That's really like, I really love, it's equity. The equity that I have is I've spent probably over the course of the last 5 years, I've probably spent, you know, 10 weeks or so here. And so that's how I have a sense of like belonging, you know? I mean, I know that when we arrive, we go to the pantry and like, it's funny that you live here,
yep,
but yet the time that you go to the pantry is when I come.
Yeah,
and it's your once a year thing.
It takes an outsider sometimes to look at your own locality with different eyes.
Yeah.
So I think as much as it's important to travel somewhere else,
yes,
for your own education, it's good to have travelers come into your patch.
Yes.
And it's like when we were talking about the average house in Manly being over $2 million. And you said, oh, the place we're in, I can't even see it being worth $1 million. And I said, I think it'd be probably worth closer to four.
Yeah.
That's when you realize, like, if you're living in America,
yeah,
you can get a lot of house,
oh, yeah,
for a little amount of money.
That's
same
what
with,
we were saying,
with cars.
I'd love to pick my house up and move it over here.
And then sell it?
Yeah. Super, yeah.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it used to actually frustrate me a little bit when I started online because when I see those people bragging about their things, like they get the new Lamborghini or whatever, thinking, you know, they can buy a Lamborghini for the same price as I can buy an AMG Mercedes.
Yes.
It's like the currency just turns into their favor. And I think if you're in that US market, it's almost impossible not to have a reasonable quality of life if you have a reasonable income because the money goes a lot further.
Yes. And you do really get, I think just observing the people here, and I had the great treat of being here this time to see something that's very rare, is the changing of leadership.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I remember
I arrived to an impending vote of no confidence in the government. So I got to witness the voting day change of leadership, which has been, how many prime ministers? Now 7 prime ministers in the last, or 6 prime ministers in the last 7 years or something.
It does vote. Here, you don't have to do much to get flicked.
Right.
Whereas
you're out. I have no confidence in you.
It seems over there, you could do just about anything, right, and people still love you.
I love Jesse told me that Madame Tussauds said they're not going to recognize any more Australian prime ministers. It's getting out of hand. They can't.
I remember asking you if you slept well, and you said you were too concerned about
the government. The government. I had no confidence.
But the funny thing is, when I went to a party on Saturday night, someone made a joke about the new prime minister, and the person standing beside me said, "Who's that?"
Who's that? Exactly.
Yeah, that's our prime minister just got voted in yesterday.
That's so
I don't
funny.
Think most people would even know who it is.
No.
It's not such a dominating headline.
Yeah, normally. That's so funny.
Do you think it's boring having the lifestyle you have? Because I think one thing when you look at your routine is, mm-hmm, one highlight is that it doesn't change much.
Okay, so it's an interesting philosophical question, right? Because I crave longevity. I like that. I think there's something to that. But I also love novelty. And so my favorite thing is to establish a context with longevity that allows novelty to overlay on top of it. So when I look at it, we were talking about this last night on the ferry, that my idea of the eight profit activators is a universal context that is a long-term thing. If you backtest it 30 years, they were there and present. If you forward go 30 years, they're still going to be there, but what's constantly changing is the ways that you can apply that, right? I'm drawn to this idea of mastery. And there's something, you know, like we saw a movie last night about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who is, for our international listeners, is a U.S. Supreme Court justice, which is a, the way that the justice system works in the U.S. is it's a big honor to be appointed. It's a presidential appointment to the Supreme Court, and it's a lifetime appointment. And so the justices very rarely change. There's 9 of them. And when Ruth Bader Ginsburg was appointed, she was early 60s, you know, and now she's 84 years old, still vital, still, you know, an amazing presence, and has spent her whole life forwarding equality, particularly among women, in all ways, equality, but just the, it reminded me of Jiro Dreams of Sushi, that movie about the sushi guy who spent his whole life just mastering sushi. And there's something like peaceful about that. I love that. I love that kind of thing, you know?
Well, I think it's, if I'm relating to this, the thing that I'm most interested in is surfing.
Yeah.
And any time spent surfing to me is pure bliss.
Yes.
I don't track the time or the ROI on it at all.
Right.
And I think it fits into that classification of flow. It's where the circles of discipline meets surrender. It's the overlapping area where you have the discipline to commit to it and do it on a daily basis and to direct a lot of thoughts and energy to it. And at the same time, you let go of it, of worrying about it dominating or taking over. You just let go of that side of it. And when you're in it, you're just doing it.
And it forces you to be present. You can only do it in the present.
There's no outsourcing with surfing.
It demands all of your attention.
You have to paddle into the wave yourself.
Yes.
What you do next determines what happens.
Yeah. And you can't multitask.
It's very hard. If you get distracted or you're in a conversation with someone or you're thinking about something else, Mother Nature tends to slap you a bit.
Pay attention.
There's so many lessons and metaphors in that. It has become a core. And I think even when I was looking at the app, which tracks how many days I've spent surfing, it really does add up, all the waves, all the time. But I'm not counting.
Are you on a streak?
Yeah.
You are? Of
not
consecutive
quite.
Days?
Not quite. There are people who have done it for 40 years.
Yeah.
However, I'm at 5 years in now, I'm becoming a little bit pickier. Mm. I want to optimize the experience.
Okay.
And I don't know if we've talked about this before, but I have a friend who's a Forex trader and a professor of psychology who was my surfing buddy. But he picks the surfing opportunities like he would Forex markets.
Oh.
He will optimize it.
Mm.
Unless it's the right direction or the wind or size or time, it won't happen.
That's interesting.
So he's really 80-20-ing this. Whereas when you begin, you just take any opportunity.
Yeah.
But I'm becoming more selective and I will sit out if it's just too small and I'm not going to develop my experience anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always an underlying target. Mm-hmm. Right now, I'm in the lead up to my Maldives trip.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm working on fitness so that I can capitalize on 3 surfs a day for a week and also refining tuning my equipment, selecting which 3 that I would take. I've had an elimination contest running. I have a rack in my house that used to accommodate 6 and I've expanded it to 8 and I keep the rest downstairs in a lockup. And from that, I take detailed notes in a spreadsheet, and I've been able to eliminate and eliminate to now I've selected the three. And in the lead up now, just like an athlete at the Olympics, I'll mostly just surf those three and get as comfortable as I can on them so that when I'm there and...
So you take three surfboards to the Maldives? Yeah.
Yes. It gives, it's like a golf club set. You have the putter and the driver. Like it's big waves or small waves.
Oh, gotcha.
And whether you're feeling really fit and refined or whether you're feeling a bit tired, you can go with something that's a bit easier or lazier.
Mm-hmm.
So with those three, I'll have myself covered.
There you go.
Yeah.
Get to use each one every day.
Well, that's the thing, you know, that it's such a lesson there. I found last time I went for 2 weeks, I rode one at least of the 27 surfs. I think I surfed it 16 times.
Wow.
And then the other two, much less. So it's like the 80-20. There'll be one that stands out and it'll get the lion's share of it. And then you have to decide the opportunity costs. Do I rotate and become reasonably good on each, or do I have the absolute maximum prime experience on the very best that suits the conditions at the time?
So you brought up the 80-20. What's your further, you've had more insights into the 80-20, I'm sure, over the last year since we talked about the...
I have. I think if we're talking about my routine and life, I play this game. It's like how leveraged and how good can I get things running? And I've retreated from doing a lot of the things that I used to do. And I have the least business models running right now in the simplest scenario. So ever since I made that chapter in my book, which was the 64-4.
Yeah. Describe that. Because I was just looking at that.
Right.
The chart.
When I was reading 80-20, Kosh talks about it being fractal.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that you can apply it to itself. So if you zoom in, it still applies to the portions. So I started doing the calculations and I thought, what if you 80-20 the 20?
Mm-hmm.
Like if the 20 is getting you 80%, what's the 80-20 of the 20? And that comes down to the 64-4.
Mm-hmm.
What it means is that 64% of your results are coming from a mere 4% of your actions or activities.
Right.
Or if you have if you've got a wardrobe of t-shirts, if you're normal, like not doing the Steve Jobs thing or the Dean Jackson thing where you wear the same thing every day, there's probably in a normal person's wardrobe, there's probably a t-shirt or a pair of jeans or some shoes that are just getting worn
more
2/3 of the time. That one item.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think it is phenomenal that almost 2/3 of your results comes from just 4%.
Yes.
In other words, the common complaint that I see from the type of people who I coach is overload, overwhelm, confusion, frustration, fear of missing out, this constant pressure. But almost all of the things they're worried about could just be dropped and forgotten about.
Yes.
And my whole role is not what can I add or what are you missing out on that we need to introduce? What extra things do you have to do? Instead, it's what can we just remove and have no negative downside?
Right.
And that leaves us the things that need to stay. And when that's all you do, then it's so much simpler. And I'm getting huge... And I don't mean to borrow this phrase, breakthroughs.
Uh-huh.
I'll probably pick a different word. I'm seeing extremely good results where I just help people simplify and say, I just want you to do this. And you do this really well in your material. You talk about one thing, one target market, one product for that target market.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that I am helping people with, is remove it. So I just see, how does this apply to my life?
Mm-hmm.
And I've been letting go of stuff, letting go of activities, letting go of physical things. And I even went through a surfboard rationalization as well. When I moved, I let go of about 12 boards just to slim them down. Like I went and looked at my spreadsheet and I figured which are the ones that I'm unlikely to ever ride again or need.
Yeah.
And it's a good karma to put them back into circulation rather than hoard them in your garage.
Yeah.
Let someone else ride them and get the stoke and the joy.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, that whole, I've been aware of that and looking at it in my own I mean, it seems like I was sharing with you that the things are just getting simpler and simpler and simpler for me as I really realize and get down to the core things and really see how much is driven from the really core activities, which is talking. And, you know, I look, if you go to the root thing, is I record one podcast a week, which goes out without fail. And from that comes 3 emails a week that deliver content from the podcast that we talk about, all including my super signature that invite people to whatever I've got going on. And it's just so, it's amazing how simple that is.
Well, let's talk about what are the 3 emails you pull from the one podcast?
Yeah. So the first, I mail on Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday. The podcast goes out on Sunday. Part of my rationale for that, choosing that day.
60 minutes?
Yeah, it's all part of it. Like 60 minutes this year, the TV show is celebrating its 50th year. And that has been such a staple of the way things go that forever, you know, Sunday night at 7 p.m., you would hear the countdown, you know, the tick, 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 tick. That is the signal. I count that as the official transition from the weekend to the week ahead. That seems like the time where now everything, you're all settled, everything's there. It's all downhill from there. You've peaked on the weekend. Now it's like, this is the wind down. You're going to then get everything kind of organized, get ready for bed. And then you're going to wake up Monday and the new week is off. And I just love the consistency of that context. We're going to do a show on Sunday night and we're going to do 3 20-minute segments on the most fascinating things that are relevant right now. And so that's kind of a cool thing. So the podcast comes out on Sunday and with it comes an announcement email. So the Sunday email is always about, here's the new podcast. And then the Tuesday, Thursday emails are all derived from things that I've said on not necessarily this week's podcast, but through previous podcasts. I have a writer who takes the transcripts and culls out 300 to 500 word gems, you know, that get sent every week. And the great news is, and perhaps the secret of it, is that I don't write a word of it. I talk for the podcast and that's it. And I don't schedule the podcasts. I don't do anything. You know, it's all this self-fulfilling loop because each episode of the podcast, or each email that goes out, you know, encourages people to be a guest on More Cheese, Less Swisher. So we've got this nonstop backlog of people who want to be guests, who've told us a little bit about their business. So Lillian is able to just reach out to them and slot the times that I've already chosen that I do the pod. I'd record a Friday, usually, and I do 2 episodes. So that'll be my Friday, as I'll record 1 at 10 o'clock and 1 at noon. And then we'll go to the movies and hang out and have the rest of the day. But just to know that that's what's happening on that day, and to have not had a thought in the world about who am I going to have on and how am I going to organize this and how am I going to record this and how, I mean, I just a voice command to call into the conference center and I dial, you know, and I talk and then I'm done. And as soon as I hang up, everything else falls into place. And it's so just relaxing. And I think about it, that's what we were saying, like how little I could do if that was all I did. You know, if you just take the 80-20, if you took out the podcast driving the Breakthrough Blueprint events and email mastery and 90-minute books, I mean, there's just so much
close to where I'm at.
Yeah.
With the podcast has been driving my business for years.
Yeah. And
through that 80-20 process, I removed the affiliate program.
Yeah.
I don't really do paid ads.
Right.
So what I have is that weekly podcast that, again, I just drag the media into a file and the team take over. They publish it. Yeah. They syndicate it on social media. They send the email broadcasts, which has the bullets. We've been doing that for a long time.
Yeah.
And that leads people to opt in for content upgrades or join my waiting list.
Yeah.
And the waiting list moves people into the membership, which is really that there's only two primary solutions people are going to find now, which is Superfast Business Membership or Silver Circle Membership. And they'll find them from my homepage quickly.
Yeah.
I do want to ask you about Super Signature in case someone listening to this doesn't know what that means.
Yeah, yeah. So I just coined that phrase, Super Signature, for the inclusion in every email of the opportunity for people to take the next step. So my format for the emails is all content. The beginning is all the content article, 300 to 500 words. Then a PS that will be something timely and topical, something like I'm coming to Sydney for a breakthrough blueprint, you know, and say instructing people if they'd like to join us to send, just reply and put Sydney in the subject line. And then the super signature is below all of that. And it always starts out, plus, whenever you're ready, here are four ways I can help you grow your business.
And you have someone else managing your emails?
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't do any of it.
Do you do any email at all?
I do, but I have two people manning my inbox. So the most of the stuff gets addressed, but then I get a sort of digest of the ones that are outliers that require my attention or anything that I might like to see.
And how do you receive that communication?
I have a separate email. So my Dean Jackson email is my universal email. It's the one I give to everybody to know that somebody is going to see that. I encourage people to email us there. And then I have another email address that is just for me, that is not a public email address, that my team and anybody that I'm communicating with or friends or clients or whatever, that's only bypasses the reception and comes straight to me. So that email is how I get notification of the things that I need. We had been experimenting with using a if this, then that for it with, you know, sending the, we have a star system that we use Gmail, like an enterprise Gmail. And so we use a star system so we could set up if this, then that of every day at 6 p.m. send me a digest of all of the emails with that have a yellow question mark or a yellow exclamation point, and that can happen automatically. Right. So I get that as the, you know, what happens.
So in our world, we have...
And I'm still terrible at responding to emails anyway, yeah.
Well, and this is the thing. As you get more opportunities coming at you, which seems to happen when you poke your head above the line...
Yeah.
We have support at superfastbusiness.com, and that drives into Help Scout, which is a very email-like experience for the customer, with the benefit that anyone in our team can log into that central place. Mm-hmm. And if my team need me to respond because it's unique to me and they can't answer it, then they will use a little help channel in Slack.
Yes.
And then I can answer it in Slack.
Yeah.
And
I'm not allowed on the Slack channel.
They'll get. See, I just use Slack.
So my team uses Slack and I don't. Or Trello.
But my team don't man my inbox. So that's our public way for people to deal with us. But I don't log into WordPress or Entreport. Right. I'm one layer back from all of those things.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure we talked about that last time we chatted, or the time before that. Super Signature, it's great. It's an easy way to...
Yeah, it's next steps. And it's always leading to something, some way that you can help. So one that is always on there is the be a guest on the podcast. It's always the top one, be a guest. Because that's the easiest way that I can help somebody right away.
And what's the selection criteria that happens behind the scenes?
Well, we look, there's a section where people tell us about their situation, about the business. People are usually very good at describing what they're going through. But because the podcast is not an expert podcast where we're looking how we weed people out, that we know that they're not a right fit for the show, is if they start out with, you know, I've done this and this and this, and your listeners will get a lot out of this. And
so it's cheese, you know, talk.
Yeah. Where it's all, yeah, all I'm looking for, the whole model for the podcast is that we're going to spend the whole hour focusing on your business and applying the 8 profit activators to your business. That's what it's all about. So it's not about like interviewing an expert about their new book or anything like that. That was something that I wanted to have a very useful podcast, you know?
It's one of the filters for us too. I really don't want people on the show who are trying to be on it.
Right.
Which is every day we get these outreach emails.
I want people who are trying to be on it, but not trying to be on it to get to the audience, you know, in a way. I want, the way the podcast, I look at it, is that we're setting it up that it's not even as if it's a podcast. It's a conversation between me and them and about their business. So it's not even, yeah.
Well, it's good because it's very instructive for your audience.
Yes.
And my prime filter for this podcast is it has to be useful for the audience. That's why I've noticed in the podcasting world, some of the people who have big distribution numbers, they now charge $3,500 per guest for the guest to come on the podcast.
Oh, wow.
So immediately
I haven't heard of anybody doing that.
Oh, it's happening.
Really?
And I think that tells me that the podcast doesn't really care about the end user so much. Now it's become a product.
Yes.
And it's commercialized.
Yes.
I mean, we don't run ads on this show either.
Right.
Because I don't think that's nice for the listener.
No.
And I am able to monetize this podcast by people naturally feeling like I might be able to help them.
Yes.
So it is interesting watching that, but I think that's when you cross the line from being interested in the end user to being interested in yourself.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It was never about monetizing the podcast. It's about gathering the right people in the right conversation and then whenever they're ready. That's what's something magic about those words too, whenever you're ready.
Well, one thing I know about you, Dean, is that you do pursue interesting conversations.
Yes.
You are genuinely interested in having a discussion, bouncing ideas back and forth. What sort of ideas are you excited about at the moment?
That's a great question because there's so many things that I'm seeing. Like the two big things that I'm really like giving a lot of thought to are this apparent full and total migration of us as a society to the cloud. And I'm fascinated by that. I'm seeing like now everything, all the evidence that comes around that of seeing. And what I mean by that is that if you go all the way back, I've had these conversations. I have a great podcast with Dan Sullivan called The Joy of Procrastination. And we have really great just conversations about stuff. If you go back to 1997 in the United States, the internet was just sort of starting to make waves. AOL, America Online, was blanketing the country, delivering floppy disks and CDs to people's homes to get everybody online. So it was all about the migration to just getting online. And in the beginning, it was mostly like about email and the chat groups and things like that, that you could connect with people. And it was a nice sort of distraction from the real world, right? And so as it has become more and more prevalent, as we've gotten deeper and deeper, and I think that 2006, 2007, when Facebook and YouTube and all of these things became all the real modern internet that we're talking about is 10 years old, that we have slowly, smartphones was the big shift on that, right? That now we are reaching a point where in surveys, some crazy number, like 78% of people across all age groups surveyed about how often they're online, answer almost always as their quantity of time that they're online. Almost always online.
And well, you think that that's... The average American is watching 6 hours of video per day.
Yeah. I mean, that's really... That's when you think about it, screen watching, right? That this, that thing, you start to see all these converging things that are happening right now. Like that idea that we're all online and we want to be there. That's where we want to be. And that's what allows things like Uber to be so popular. You know, where something like the things that are winning online are the things that are the bridges kind of between our home in Cloudlandia and our needs on the mainland. Like our physical meat robot is still here on the mainland, right? We're physically still here. But everything about the way we coordinate things is happening up in Cloudlandia. And when you look at that, there was a great article in the New York Times called The Tyranny of Convenience. And it was laying out how the proposition was that convenience is the most underestimated power that of anything, that it drives everything that we do. Even when our preference would be something else, convenience will weigh, right? Like if people say they prefer to brew their own coffee, but it's just so convenient to get coffee at Starbucks. That's what we end up doing, you know? And so it's saying how convenience is always ratcheting forwards. Like we never go back. Like once you've had a taste of something being more convenient, you can't go back. Like it would be, and the way the article is written is just beautiful because they talk about how when once you've had a experience of washing your clothes in a washing machine compared to hand washing them,
down to the river.
You would never go back down to the river. Right, exactly.
I talk about this in Own the Race Course.
Yeah.
This is where the convenience trap, I call it, where they make it so easy for you to put your content on their platform.
Yes.
You could be tricked into not having your own platform.
Yes.
Or like in my case and your case, you have a website.
Yeah.
I have a website. At least they can't take that or tell me how it's going to operate in the long term.
Yes.
Or my email list. It's just hard work.
That's exactly right.
And that's where I think a little bit of inconvenience is still good for you. And I think the daily surf, it's inconvenient to get into a wetsuit and walk down in winter down to the water, which is a bit cold when you first get in.
Yeah.
The joy and the experience that comes from that. You can't.
We have to fight gravity. You have to fight
resistance
upstream to do these things like that. Yeah, it's much more. You look at kids now that esports is overtaking by a long shot. And you think about this gaming.
I do.
Gaming is a business, as a business, is 5 times bigger than the movie, the entire movie industry. The gaming industry is 5 times bigger than that.
Because
it's largely invisible.
And it taps into so many psychological factors that are ultra addictive. And I think the research that I've seen now shows that the skill that the kids are missing that we had is resilience.
Mm.
They have very little resilience. There's no ability to overcome the smallest resistance because they've had this convenience from the day they're born.
Yeah. I think that that's something. In that article, they talked about once you've experienced streaming television or content online, the whole thought of having to be in front of your TV at a certain time seems silly and a little bit undignified. It just seems a little bit undignified that I'm being forced to be in front of my TV at 9 o'clock.
Look at the attendance rates on live webinars versus how many people expect a replay or an on-demand.
Yeah.
And I heard an ad on the radio when I was driving the other day, and they said you can download the radio app so that you can listen to your favorite station when you're out fishing or doing other things.
That's amazing. They're fighting
a losing battle there.
Yeah.
The people like you and I can sit here with a phone and record a podcast and publish it on our own platforms.
Yes. And that more people, I mean, that's the thing that, you know, our ability to curate our own listening, that our own stuff. And you start to realize, man, there's just so much. There's no end. We're never going to catch up in terms of there's so much more content. Yet, even though more and more and more, we have this bounty of options of content to watch. This is what's amazing, is if you think about Cloudlandia as a place, if you migrate and you buy into this and your smartphone is your passport to it, that your entry into Cloudlandia with your data plan or your Wi-Fi is that you have your own television station and you have your own radio station and you have your own printing press. It's a complete level playing field. All the smart TVs right now are just ancillary screens to our mobile devices that you just flick your finger, and what you're watching on the screen is now you're just watching it on a bigger screen. So there's absolutely no difference in the viewing area that you have access to and competition from, that you're dealing with Netflix now. You know, I mean, in terms of if you want somebody to watch your video content, to you're competing with.
And the large companies, Apple and Amazon, YouTube, they're all buying content. They're paying for content to capture that.
It's amazing, right?
I really think this is going to be the asbestos or nicotine of the future.
Say what you mean by that.
I mean that I think this is a massive scourge on society.
Well, I don't know that. I think
like
that,
Ready Player One.
I think I want to see that movie. I know the general.
But I mean, basically a scenario where people, the in-person live version.
Yeah, no, I definitely see it
opting out of living to go online.
But that's where most of us functionally have already done that. Teenagers are already there.
Oh, I understand it's happening, but I don't think it's good for people.
Okay, yeah. And that's another question then, right? Like, that's another thing that it's definitely against the norm. There's a perfect example. So I have a good friend in Winter Haven, and he just happens to be 69 years old. And this was a guy that, you know, just I remember coming sort of kicking and screaming into the smartphone world in 2006, getting the first iPhone. That was the big thing. Well, my flip phone's fine. Why do I need my email and all that stuff, right? So here's a guy. We were going to watch something on Netflix. He comes over to my house. He lives literally about a 7-minute drive door to door to my house. And we get all settled. We had some grapes and all the stuff. He gets settled. And then right before we're about to start the movie, he's like patting himself, looking for his phone, realizing that, oh, I've left my phone at home, right? Now, he was going to go back home to get his phone.
Because he had separation anxiety.
That is exactly it. It's like it's an oxygen tank.
Yeah.
But he went out to the car and it was in the car. But just that thing, that level, that low level panic. Have you ever tried to leave your house without your phone? Like, even if you have the intentions.
Is my point, exactly. Yeah. I do it every single day.
Yeah.
Like, I'm fed up with Facebook.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in Twitter. I've been using those services since they came in the beginning. And I'm not a regular person, as are you. And I'm saying, if I'm getting to the point now where I'm over it, I think normal people will be there and 5 to 7 years from now. But I do think the research will come out. There'll be more of a groundswell around how bad this is for you as a human.
Yeah.
And I do leave my phone at home when I go out to a cafe. I do go down to the surf and spend a few hours analoging it. Just me and
right.
And
off the grid.
Off the grid.
Yeah.
And I think that is the most healthy,
yes.
adjusted thing.
But you really have to build that in, and it requires
discipline.
Yes.
And I don't think an average person has, firstly, I don't think they're aware of the situation. And secondly, they may lack the ability to control it.
Yeah.
So my whole point is, I think
our brains, this is how we're so wired into it. What I was saying was, when I try and leave the house without the phone, your brain is saying to yourself, it almost seems, we're convinced that it's almost irresponsible to leave the house without your phone, because, well, what if something goes wrong? What if I need to reach somebody, or what if?
And that's
it
what
it just seems so.
It's exactly what I was talking yeah. about. That discipline of going hardcore, old school. You know,
I just had a friend.
I'm sitting here in winter in bare feet, right? I'm zagging away from the trap of getting lulled into yeah. this boots and all.
I had a friend who just came back from a 4 or 5 day silent retreat. And this is just in the US. He went for a period of time where there's no talking, no communicating, no screens, nothing. You get a journal, you bring your journal, you can, you know, read the physical books, nothing, no electronics, anything like that. And he's saying, like, just the thought of it, you know, just that connection, the deep level, what you get from it.
Well, surely that is a sign, right?
The words that he was using to describe it, because it's something, you know.
The author talks about that in the book 10% Happier, about how yes. difficult it was.
Right.
But I think you only need a detox if you're doing something wrong in the first place. Like, if you have a healthy diet, you don't need to detox. If you have a healthy relationship with technology, you don't need to detox.
So I was blown, he's texting me after coming out of it. He says, so I was blown away again, because he's done this before, by how connected it feels when you're truly disconnected.
That's
which
right.
Which is a really interesting thing. He said, no masks or labels to shade the light within. And I got so much work done, good work, idea work, the stuff that flows when there aren't any distractions. I know you know what I'm talking about. You feel it when you're in the lab sometimes. Imagine shutting yourself for 72 hours, food left at your door, no phone or tablet, and you just you and the whiteboard and your moleskin. That's really... I've never done it. Never done a silent retreat like that, but I'm intrigued by it, you know?
I've done a couple of weeks in the Maldives where yeah. my phone broke. And I don't take a laptop.
Right.
And it was great. This is what I'm talking about. I would highly prescribe someone to have yeah. analog time on a daily basis.
Yes.
When my wife and I went to Queensland recently to speak at an event, and we went to the breakfast every morning, the guy was offering me the paper. And I said, no, thanks.
I love a paper.
Well, the next day he offered me and I said, no, thanks. By the third day, he said, oh, that's right. You two actually talk to each other. So we don't have the paper or the phone. My wife and I, when we go to have a meal, we actually don't use the phone. Yeah. She'll actually get angry if I have the phone.
Yeah.
And now I'm trained out of it.
Oh, wow.
But it's so much better when you can go somewhere and actually yeah. talk to someone.
Something, right?
Well, it's what used to happen in the old days.
Yeah, I look at that and you think, you know, we've been fortunate that, you know, you're at the age too where you have a recollection of pre-internet.
BMX bikes yeah. till the lights go on.
Yeah.
Out of the house.
Yeah. And so I think that just recognizing the macro trend of everybody migrating to the cloud, and you're seeing how that's happening, that every possible thing that is going to be more convenient to live through the apps is a win. Like, I look at the things, I just observe and put them in the categories. Like, my Starbucks app is a wonderful thing that I set it up. You've got it. As I'm arriving, push the button for my order, walk into Starbucks, go to the counter and pick up my
drink. So you're basically saying, just plug me in now. I'm done.
I'm saying, listen, I'm saying that I see the value of access to these things. Like I look at, so I've been all over the world basically this year. If you think about, you know, three corners of the earth and, you know, in London and Amsterdam and here and Toronto and all over the United States, that I often tell people, like they say, can you come meet me over here or whatever? If I'm in a hotel, can you, you know, come on, let's meet over here. And I always tell people, of course, I keep a whole fleet of cars on standby all over the world, just in case I might need one. There's something magical about the fact that no matter where I am, wherever I go in the world, I don't know, and I imagine it's almost like this everywhere now, that I can have a car at my feet in a maximum of 3 to 5 minutes. And when I say at my feet, I mean to the closest possible place from where I'm sitting, that I can just keep my head in the cloud, the screen, and I only have to look up enough to just open the door and get in. And then when I get out, I look up enough to know that I'm here, and I get out and I close the door and I keep on going. That convenience, that little removal of friction of paying for something. The same thing with the Starbucks app. Like, if you know, it's like getting coffee like a diplomat. You know, you're just, you walk in, you skip the line. There's some, no,
a part of that makes me a bit sad. I think
you can,
because I think a life without friction is like, what's the point?
I don't know. Gary Vaynerchuk just said this the other day, that we kind of romanticize the past, right? But only the first level, the last level past. So nobody's romanticizing the previous. What we're romanticizing, as nobody is romanticizing this previous generation. It's just the transition, right? So if you look at it from the coffee, like getting your Starbucks coffee with your app, that you can just walk right in, pick up the coffee and not have to pay.
Firstly, it's tragic that you have to drink Starbucks.
I understand. But the whole thing combined with what was your option before.
Well, you know, that's the thing. I don't mind a bit of stoic. I make my own coffee, but yeah. I also buy coffee out. And, of course, I take a reusable cup where possible these days. But I don't know. I think, for me, frictionless isn't the goal. And if it is the goal, the cloud's going to be very seductive.
It is.
But I don't mind some stoic stuff. I don't mind grinding beans and making coffee. I don't mind walking somewhere.
I got it. But that's because you like to feel like you're better than people.
Not really at all. I think he's joking there, folks, just by the way. I don't think so. I just think I'm connected with the sense that we're shifting, and I'm not sure I like it. Not that I'm resistant to change. Right. I do like using PayWave to pay for things. I think that makes sense, because coins are just annoying.
Absolutely.
But someone's missing out. This is the point. I imagine the tips have gone off. They forget about tips now since the coins have gone. It's pretty hard on service staff. And now that we're pushing a button and the food comes to our door.
Yes. You just had that happen right here now.
Yes, but eventually you won't be able to go and sit in the place and eat it, because they can't afford to exist after their 40% margins cut. There will be a loser.
I was sharing with you that there's something that's fascinating to me is this concept of ghost restaurants. There's a brand in the U.S., of a group in New York and Chicago, that started 9 different restaurant brands that they operate out of the same commissary kitchen. And so they run the Forbes or Fast Company article was 9 restaurants, 1 kitchen, no dining room. Because they don't have a physical location that you can go and eat at. The only place they exist is on Grubhub and Seamless. So, which is Cloudlandia. They only exist on Cloudlandia. And services like Deliveroo or Grubhub or Seamless, well, they're these transitional things. It's largely positioning services for the mainland. Because the only place that those delivery services operate is on the mainland. And it's this whole thing that there's a real distinction between, are you going to be part of the Cloudlandia economy, or are you going to be part of the mainland economy?
That's what I'm saying. I know where we got our lunch from today. They embrace delivery, and they have they've actually set up a satellite place now to deal with that. They have to, or they will be out of business. Mm. But you only have to walk around Manly and see a lot of empty shops, because Cloudlandia is dominating retail, as you know.
Yes. I mean, there's that.
In fact, some of the retailers are their own worst enemy. You go into a shop now and ask for something, they say, oh, you have to check on our website for that. Well, that's just the death knell.
Yeah, because anything you need to check on physical goods in the U.S. anyway is going to be Amazon. That's where people are going to go, and they're delivering everything, right? And that's the other thing, is that when you look at what we're part of now, is that any physical good can be delivered to my doorstep at the very latest tomorrow morning, at the very latest. And that's really, I think, progress, right? Like, that feels like nobody's...
They used to do that with milk and bread.
Yeah.
They used to
right to your door.
Right through.
That's where we're coming back to.
Plus, it was made
now,
out of food that wasn't contaminated or would...
But that's where we're coming back to now, is that the whole idea of that level of service again. Because I think that economically, the people who choose to embrace Cloudlandia and participate in the Cloudlandia economy are going to fare far better in the long run than the people who are
both of us are based
sticking
there
on the mainland. Right.
Right.
But I think understanding that and being able to have the best of both worlds, where you can take part in the Cloudlandia economy by organizing people in the mainland. I mean,
I think that's why there's a good place for live events, those sort of things that people crave them more.
Yeah.
I'm running an event next year because my audience have been very vocal asking for it. They want it. They miss it. And that's nice, because my whole business exists in Cloudlandia.
Yeah.
And these live events are just, apart from the Maldives Mastermind, which is just like, that's nirvana. You know, the live event component is still super valid.
Yeah.
I guess my whole point is just watch out for the technology and make sure you're not unconsciously moving into an area that is hard to get out of later. And I say this with context. I've got 4 kids, the oldest being 22, the youngest being 16. And I'm seeing the youngest one's experience with online interaction has become past a point where I would say is fair and reasonable.
Mm.
And I've seen what can happen if you just get too hooked into that. And I'm seeing the extreme example, and I think we should pull up a few steps prior to that level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's that balancing thing, like the thing that it's the irony of the things that get rewarded, even in Cloudlandia, are the consumption of things that take long effort
and
outside of that.
Like, you think same things as poker machines in the casinos, that, you know, 15 times till you get a payoff and need teamwork, collaboration.
Yeah.
It's still moving while you're not there. You're missing out.
Yes.
There are hidden surprises. Dare I ask what the second thing you're interested in is?
The second thing?
You said there was 2 things, and one was the cloud.
Uh-huh. The other thing is the ability to, on a broader scale, for collaboration. That the, I've been really watching what's been going on with Kylie Jenner as one example of that. And, you know, Kylie Jenner has just now passed $1 billion. She's a billionaire, you know, in a very short period of time, less than 3 years. And starting with a capital investment of her own money, she spent $250,000 to start her venture and has turned that into $1 billion net worth. But the great thing is that she only has 5 full-time employees and 7 part-time. So when you look at this, that she's got $350 million in sales last year with five employees and, you know, seven part-time, that she's collaborating with partners who can do all of the other parts. She has a manufacturing and distribution partner who make her lip kits and distribute them, package and distribute them. She's partnered with Shopify for all of the e-commerce, her website, her all of that stuff to do with that. Her mom's management company runs the business side of the thing. And she just has the creative team where she's the ideas. And I think that there's never been a better time, and it's only getting better for people who are true creators. If you really thought about it, if we thought about it, if our objective was to create a business that could do $1 million a year without any employees or without anything, just with partnering with other people, there are all of the components of it. You could orchestrate putting all these together because you can essentially outsource everything now.
Well, I mean, the simple way is just to have 10 revenue share deals making 10 grand a month.
Yes.
Where you're just using your IP intellect.
Yes.
That's a one-person business.
Yes.
Which is, you know, it's what I'm building on the side.
Yes.
And I'm about 40% there.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a clever business.
Yeah.
But then I think people like Peter Drucker were doing that in the 60s, selling his brain and being the world's best management consultant in his, you know, in his living room.
I don't know how he was doing it. I don't know anything about him, really.
Well, he just had people come over to his house and he'd sit opposite them and ask them compelling questions. And they'd come up with answers and discover things, and he was probably the best at it. Mm-hmm. And he really was the founder of the knowledge worker.
Yeah.
Which is almost what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Where he said in the future, traditional education would crumble and we would be able to get paid for our knowledge wherever we are. I mean, this is in the 60s.
Exactly. He's saying that and here we are.
In the 60s. So this is...
I wonder if there's a good documentary about him. I'd love to see.
I wish there was, but I have indeed, and I would recommend buy every Drucker book.
Yeah.
The Effective Executive, mm-hmm. the Daily Drucker.
Mm-hmm.
If you get the Daily Drucker, you read one chapter per day and it's just one page. It's very easy to read. And after 1 year, you'll have a pretty good understanding of strategy compared to the average person.
Yeah.
But he was a genius. And some of the best things that I got from him, and I got to see him present live once via satellite
mm-hmm.
before he passed away, was that it's more important to be effective than efficient.
Yeah.
And that's really been a foundation. I see a lot of people trying to be efficient, but that's not the goal. I'm often questioning what the goal is. And I know it's like L.A. Goldratt, who's sort of in a similar category, he had this great saying, don't wish for an easy life, wish for a rich and full life. That's why I'm not chasing one-tap convenience on my app. I want to live. I want the experience.
Yeah. Well, it's really, I mean, there's so many things. I'm at a really like philosophical point in my life because I'm really seeing this now, you know, like I have a different vista, you know, it's having turned 50. It's a different world. I have a context for what I started my business career. You know, I'm 52 now. So I started at 22, you know, 30 years now. This November will be 30 years. And so I have a context for what that is. If you take this another 30 years from now, I'll be Ruth Bader Ginsburg at 82. That amount of time now, forward.
Well, I think the things that become obvious for me at my age of 47 is health.
Yeah.
I'm in a substantially better situation than I was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And because if you think about it, we might, depending on how radical your thoughts are on where we're going,
mm-hmm.
you're probably at the halfway mark. You might not be there yet if we're lucky, or we might be past it if we're not. But if you are, things like health and relationships come in. We're in a power position when you have time and money.
Yes.
But the health side of it, and I'm quickly experiencing this, you know, whenever I have a health issue, you know, it's really very important.
Yes.
We may not get into the cloud early enough before right. you can discard your bag right. of bones. Right?
Right, right.
So if that's the case, I think that the irony here is it kind of supports my point. To get health, you need some resistance.
It's true. There's no convenient way.
You're not going to push a button with that.
You're absolutely right.
You need resistance.
Yes.
And
that's what I'm saying is that the juxtaposition of it, right? That the society, we reward things that take time and a lot of effort. You
if,
know?
If you were a kid and you spent your entire time on the cloud, you're going to end up with health problems and social interaction problems. Mm-hmm. I think it's still valuable to be able to interact in the actual world.
Yeah.
It's like, really, we spent a lot of time on this topic, but we are at a crossroads in society where we have a unique window on it. You're getting access to all the business visionaries, the Kurzweils and the Diamandis and the what have yous in your travels. And I'm seeing it from a family situation and observing my own withdrawal from the electron world.
Yes,
I spent too long on the computer 10 years ago through to 5 years ago. And I'm going the other way. I see people like Elon Musk and I think that's not heroic. Even Ginsburg, I mean, she'd work through till the morning and eat one meal a day and then have to drag her in, you know.
Yeah.
That's kind of sad
in a
way, but as long as she's happy is my caveat there.
Right.
As long as she's happy, I wouldn't be happy with that. But it seems like every now and then there's a person has to throw their life to the wolves to give society a better go.
Right.
If we're going to go to Mars, someone has to give up their life for it.
I get it. You're right.
And but interestingly, Arianna Huffington wrote an open letter to Elon Musk.
Oh, really? I
didn't see it. It's pretty much saying, dude, you've lost the plot. The science doesn't back what you're saying about these 120-hour weeks.
Oh, really? Right. Yeah. Oh, right. Well, that's an interesting thing for her to do because of her book and stuff.
She's been reading the same research that I have, that you need sleep.
Yeah. Well, she has a great book called Thrive, and that's her thing. That was her big realization is that, you know, because she was doing the same thing.
And I've reached it. And I know people listening to this are at the phase in their business where it's a struggle and they're in a crossover and it's a challenge. The message is, from my perspective, is, and I've written a whole book on this topic, that you can actually pull back a bit down the track if you decide you want to.
Yeah.
I think I've struck a better balance. Mm. But for me, it's less time on the computer and less time with the device is giving me a better quality of life.
Yeah, I think that's true. And it's really like when you get right down to it, you know, this is really the thing that we're going to experience the next 25 years only in the tidbit of today. And so your daily joy of setting up the life that you really want for that day, that the majority of days are exactly that. They're very formulaic.
My money will come from the cloud.
Yes.
And I'll be spending it on land.
Yes.
My goal would be that my daily surf routine isn't impacted whatsoever, no matter which lunatic's in charge of the United States
or
what store is selling the most e-commerce. Doesn't matter to me.
Right.
As long as I have financial independence, I'll be heading down for a paddle.
Yes.
That's my daily
metric.
That.
That's
the yardstick.
I like it.
And I won't need to be going to detox anytime soon because I detox every day.
Yes.
I let it out.
And you're grounding every day.
Grounding.
Yes.
Yeah. And if people would stop dropping glass bottles on the footpath, I'd have a better transit to the surface.
That's so
funny. Like four glass cuts on my bare feet at the moment. But, you know, it keeps you humble.
But it's going to be amazing to see what happens over the next 20 years as we complete this series.
We may reflect back on episode 5. That was the big,
the awakening. I mean, really.
It's probably where we're almost always in sync with philosophies, but we're probably on the either side of the spectrum here with the convenience one. It's good though. It makes interesting discussion.
Absolutely.
So any final thoughts, Dean?
I've really enjoyed these conversations. I mean, I do. It's like such a, it doesn't seem like we joked, you know, I arrived in Manly, but I realized I hadn't seen you in physically in 2 years.
Yes.
But it wasn't any, like no time had passed.
Yeah. It's like, I still feel like I know you.
Right.
because we've had our Cloudlandia relationship. Yes,
that's exactly it.
And I think that's a good supplement to have the physical and the online relationship makes it strong. I mean, going back, well, our first meeting in Detroit was a long time ago now.
Yeah.
And I still use the advice you taught me then. And over the years, it's been always a privilege to be able to have these conversations I open up a little notes pad and take a few notes. I've got a good idea that I'm going to use. And I also really enjoyed a discussion we had around about books and the marketing of said books.
Yes.
And I think we've resolved some of our diametrically opposed viewpoints through a process of education and debate.
Real experience. That's right. Yeah.
Because that's one thing that has changed since then. You know, we joked about it second last time.
Yes.
That taking me a while to get my book out.
Yes.
I'm on the slow process, but we got there and I might do some smaller projects as a supplement.
Yes.
And that will be interesting.
Which is great. I think I'm such a fan, you know, because realizing in the light of all the data, our brains fundamentally are much slower to adapt than our minds. And that's an interesting distinction, our brains and our minds, right? Our minds are in the cloud and we're there, but our brains are still, you know, they're wired caveman brain.
Yeah.
That's exactly what we have, you know? So we've got this sense that books for a very long time will always be viewed as a authority and a valuable thing. And so they'll be desirable.
Even if no one even reads them.
And which they don't.
Yeah.
That's the big news.
It is. Yeah. I could tell from the popular highlights in Kindles, they always run out after the first chapter or so.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, everybody gets all excited. They sit down and highlight that.
It's like the collector mentality. I think having a lot of Kindles on your app probably makes you feel like you're covered, even if you don't read them.
Yeah.
And gosh, just to
the majority don't.
No. And to keep in theme with this, right now, next week, I've got there's some good truck action.
Yeah.
Listen to that. That's a big rig.
Wow.
Wow. That's impressive.
This is very impressive.
So I've got the joiner.
These $3.8 million windows.
Yeah. I've got the custom joinery guys installing a full floor to ceiling bookshelf that goes for about 16 feet along my wall.
I love that.
I'm going to put all my books up.
Yes.
It'll be a fabulous backdrop for my videos.
Yes.
The difference being I've actually read the books.
Yes.
And still the best, hands down, the best investment ever, physical books back in the day. But I think sitting down in the beanbag with a good book is still a joyful pursuit, even without the tech.
Yeah.
And I think, though, you're right, that you talk about the elements that a book needs to have, and it was something along the lines of a title that conveys
it's the three things.
Perfect.
You got to have a title. Well, first of all, the first thing is you got to have a book.
Yeah.
Second thing is you got to have a title that, upon reading it, the person that you want to be in conversation with says, that's the book for me. And then you got to have a way for them to get it. Those are the three things that matter if you're using a book as a conversation starter.
The way for them to get it, you're advertising to people on Facebook.
They put
in their details and you send
every
them a PDF. Free plus shipping. What are your thoughts?
It never feels like free. There's no free element to it.
That's my feeling.
Yeah.
I think it's a downright fraud.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's not free. It's like, let's face it.
Right.
Free plus shipping, it's not free.
Yeah. And any amount, I mean, it certainly filters, you know, it'll lower the number of people that will take your free book compared to if it was truly free.
Well, you know, the quality of people I get coming through my book funnel, should we call it? Yeah. I hate the word, but the people who buy my book for whatever it costs, I don't know how much it is.
Yeah.
Let's say it's $19 or something.
Yes.
They're very good people for me to help after that because they've already invested and there's not as many of them.
Right.
However, they're fantastic.
Yeah. And I have no evidence that the people who buy a book with free shipping are any better long-term prospects than people who accept your gift of a free book with no payment.
It seems also the people who have the free plus shipping models, they're often the most aggressive in the messenger box and every other medium.
Too. Yeah, because they want to recoup that right away. That's the whole thing. That's why immediately what drives it is the free plus shipping and you pay that. And while your credit card is active,
well, we're going to hit
in that same session. But wait, this is a one-time opportunity for this $97 thing that you can do. And that's how they pay for the advertising. You know, it's an expense-based approach. That was a...
And when I was interviewing Scott DeGrosier from Wicked Reports a few episodes back, he said the average break-even point off $1.5 billion worth of traffic was 45 days. It's kind of an optimistic funnel to get the money back straight away. Yeah. Or it might be too hard on the prospect.
Yeah.
You like to get someone a result before you ask them for money, don't you?
I like that. I mean, I just feel like I know that the long term is where all the money is.
Yeah.
That I know that if you have a perfect example. So I was in London, do my Breakthrough Blueprint event. And there was a gentleman there from Germany who has been on my list for 7 years. Never bought anything, never knew who he was. And all of a sudden, the first thing he does is he pays $5,000 to come to a Breakthrough Blueprint after 7 years of being on my list. And that happens all the time.
I love that. It also supports my dislike for the traditional ascension model.
Yes.
He's going to buy a cheap product and a slightly more expensive.
I'd rather give people cheap products
that
are valuable.
This podcast.
Yeah.
I often have members join Superfast Business saying they've listened to 100 hours of my podcast.
Of course.
And here they are. Great. Yes. We've gone from nothing to $1,000 a year.
Yeah.
In a heartbeat.
Yeah.
And 100 hours.
Yeah.
But I wasn't there for those 100 hours.
You were
hours.
Doing the 100 anyway.
It was happening.
It felt effortless.
That's it. Why not help? As it turns out, every time we upload an episode, at least a couple of thousand people will listen to it in the first few days.
Yes.
And then over time, the episodes can get up to 10 or 15,000 downloads of that. And now we're also uploading to SoundCloud and the whole episodes get put on Facebook.
Yeah.
I'm not so precious about where they're getting it now, but they can get it. And it's free.
Yeah.
There's no shipping.
No shipping. And it's like the podcast is the perfect vehicle.
Yes.
Because audio, I think, is the clearest attention that we can get. Because you're getting the attention while somebody's physical body is otherwise occupied. You know, that's where the purest thing, where people are driving.
So it's a courteous medium.
Yeah.
It's not as attention really demanding as video.
Well, that's the thing is video requires... that you have to be eyes on it and you're locked in.
It's more work for both parties.
And that way, that's where I think that then you truly are, you're competing with Netflix.
Right.
Because if I'm going to be watching a video of something, its majority is going to be kicked back watching something for entertainment.
One of my recent trainings was how to drive sales with 8 minutes of video per week and social media.
Nice.
My videos are 1 minute each.
Yeah.
So it takes me 8 minutes a week to record 5 1-minute videos, which I give to the team and they put across all platforms.
Right.
And so if you are going to do video, I know that almost everybody will watch a 1 minute video the whole way through.
Yeah.
And you can get across one point in a minute.
Yeah.
And that's appeal great. To people's very short attention
span. That's great. I like that kind of thing, like short
micro content
video,
like things. Your movie reviews.
I was just going to say that my movie reviews.
You are doing
my travel things are a little. My travel logs are a bit like that.
They are.
They're 2 minutes as a long one, you know?
And fresh and helpful.
Yeah, yeah.
Dean, here we are, episode 5 done.
Episode 5. It's fun.
Making our way through this.
Yeah, it's all very exciting.
Till next time.
Maybe one day you'll come to Florida.
Oh, I will. I've been before, but I'll go again.
Yeah.
I was going to go soon, actually.
I understand.
But I will go perhaps next year.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Exchange program.
Discover how to build your business super fast. Check out superfastbusiness.com.